Hello.
Hello.
And welcome back to another episode of
Into the Unknown.
Darko, stop finishing my sentences. Welcome to another podcast. And on today's podcast, I want to welcome another guest. So today we have on Lewis Daly. First of all, I want to clear up some clarification. He is not the brother of Tom Daly, although he does have a brother called Tom. I know. When he told me, it confused me at first too. So Lewis is without a question one of the hardest working and humble individuals I've ever had the pleasure of meeting and coaching. Coming from a water polo background, he's been hugely successful with his local team, City of Manchester Water Polo Club, and the GB squad, across GB. And I'm sure we'll go into that in kind of this podcast. And if I were to list his successes, it would take me absolutely ages. So I'm not going to bother listing them. He can probably do that. Also, just before I forget, he's also studying dentistry. I mean, I'm not really sure what this guy can't do. So he did say before this that he had a face for radio, but you should see his teeth. They're absolute pearly whites. So without further ado, Lewis, how are you doing? And what have you been up to, mate?
Connor, Zarko, it's an absolute privilege to be on this afternoon. Thank you for having me. Been up to? Pretty much the same as everybody else. Lockdown, trying to get exams finished and trying to crack on with my training and fitness as best as I can, given the circumstances.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, but you have a row machine as well, right? So I'm assuming that's probably keeping you pretty busy.
Sorry, I missed you there, mate. What was that?
So you've got a row machine now, so I'm assuming that's probably keeping you pretty busy as well, right?
That's a daily occurrence, that is. And that's sort of a love-hate relationship. As much as I know it's doing me good, just beforehand warming up, it's like, uh-oh, here we go again. It's not a very pleasant experience.
No, I can imagine. And I guess that kind of brings us into a sort of, just to kind of get the listeners to know a little bit more about you, can you kind of bring us up to speed as to like how you got to where you are today? So studying dentistry. And I also, interestingly enough, I did a little bit of research on you. You did a gap year. So I want to know a little bit about that, like where you went, what you did, and then also kind of if you could bring a bit of water polo into that as well. I know that's a big question, but
how long have you got? That is a massive topic. So obviously, I'm rowing at the moment. I'm part of King's rowing team, but I was never originally a rower. As you said, I played water polo. Mm-hmm. And that sort of started back when I started school and I was a decent swimmer. And one evening, she wasn't able to pick me up. So I had to go to this water polo session. And to be fair, mate, I absolutely loathed it. I hated playing water polo. Why on earth would you want to get a ball and a team involved when I was happy swimming up and down? It was some of the worst weeks of my life doing that training session. I could not wait for it to be over. But eventually, it sort of snowballed from there. I got invited to trial for City of Manchester.
Yep.
Got a place there, Northwest team. Eventually, got unsuccessful first time, second time round, absolutely smashed it. And then in 2013, went to my first European qualifiers with the Great Britain juniors, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
From there, again, even higher, senior men's England team, senior men's Great Britain team. Most recently, we went to Naples to play at the World University Games. I'm going to mention that a little bit later on. Cool. But as you mentioned, yeah, I did a gap year. So doing all those things whilst I was in the UK, sort of GCSEs, sixth form, balancing all those. I decided that I was going to take a break from education and take some time out of studying. So I ended up training in Hungary for 3 months now. I know Zarko's got a little bit of a polo background, and you'll know Hungary's sort of a top, top class.
Powerhouse
of water polo. Yeah, so they've got 26 Olympic and World Championship medals between them. Bloody so yeah. It's a pretty impressive collection.
Yeah.
So to play over there was an absolute privilege. So played for 3 months there for a local team and then ended up in Australia. And unbeknown to me, playing, I was just enjoying myself. They played in a sea pool, like they had the sunshine and had barbecues after every game. It was awesome. I actually got scouted for the state team for New South Wales and ended up being the captain of the team. So literally just these opportunities opened up, like this English boy that they'd never seen before comes over and ends up captaining their team. It was pretty, pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
So this is all on your gap year?
This is all on my gap year, like it awesome. So that's sort of one of the things I enjoy about pole. It's sort of taken me all over the world, opened up so many opportunities. And one of the cool things about it is it's so flexible. Like, I usually play inside a pool. In Hungary, like, we played inside like this dome, almost like tent. In Australia, I was playing in the sea, lakes. So, and over in Australia, like, a funny story, we were just taking some practice shots in a warm-up and a ball rebounded into the corner of the pitch. And normally everyone, you would swim over to the corner of the pitch and go get the ball. But how's the earth is going on? And all the boys started laughing at me and they said that I'd be super careful over there because that's where Steve the Stingray lives. And never in my life would I have thought I would have heard that during the polo games. Safe to say, I never ventured into that corner again because I was not getting stung by a stingray.
Oh, God.
So I've had some fantastic experiences playing polo. And that was literally just my gap year. Then when I got back, I went to Liverpool University for my first degree. Went to the World University Games twice. But being part of the GB Men's Water Polo team, they haven't come top eight in a world competition for 50 years. And when we went in 2017, we came eighth, which obviously doesn't sound fantastic.
Yeah, but
for Great British Water Polo, that was a massive achievement. And to be part of that team was, like, it was breathtaking, really. So, oh, I'm rambling. Anyway, so skip forward three more years, amazing. World University Games, competing at the top level. I come down to King's and sort of decide it's time to take a break from water polo. And I started rowing for the King's team.
Yep.
And that sort of brought you up to date. That was a brief history of me. So there we go. Yeah.
A brief history. What a fantastic history.
That was like,
I have to say, I'm just so excited because obviously, yeah, I used to play water polo for a few years. And then just hearing like someone from our aisles, you know, do so well and, you know, go abroad on a gap year and like do so well as well. It's just amazing because like for me growing up, when I tell my mates, like, what is that? What do you do in water polo? Like, is that
that's
like
the story of my life? It's the typical how do the horses get in the water? That's what I used
I used to get like people used to think it was like volleyball in the water for me. Like, is that where you like you know, you're in the shallow end and stuff? I was like, nah. Oh my god. But yeah, no, I was just it's super super exciting to have you on, mate.
Oh, thank you. It's really good to be here and sort of spread like such a niche sport because not many people in the UK know about water polo. But the opportunity, I really wish more kids could get involved because it's such a super team sport and the camaraderie sort of gain from being 100%. Part of that team and competing at a top level is unbeatable.
100%. I mean, you're all drowning together, basically, or trying to drown each other.
It's, like, it's synchronized drowning, mate. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
The ultimate bro maker. I know Connor probably... actually, no, Connor, you'd have some fun.
But with what? Water polo?
Yeah, mate.
Nah, mate. I hate water. What are you on about? I hate swimming in general. You know that. I can't swim.
We have to get you into it.
Well, my definition
Zach and
swimming,
I will take you down, mate. We'll take you down.
I mean, you can try, but I don't know. Because my description of my swimming is trying not to drown. That's how I would describe my swimming.
I mean, that's basically water polo, plus like try and bang in a few goals as well.
That sounds fair. Maybe I'll be the goalie. I don't really have to do a lot, do I?
Well, you're going to have to beat a lot of eggs.
A lot of egg beater going on there, yeah.
Really? Well, mate, I can do egg
beater. You've got strong legs.
Yeah, I've got this. That'll do. I'll be a goalie. I can egg beat all day.
Yeah, so, Lewis, quickly, before Connor jumps in with his big question. So you mentioned you already have a degree from Liverpool University. So how old are you?
that's a good question. I'm 23 at the moment. So obviously I took a gap year after school. Did 3 years at Liverpool University studying anatomy, human biology, and I'm now in my second year of dentistry at King's, so going into my third. So it's been a bit of a long slog university-wise, but I'm hoping long-term it's going to pay off.
Yeah, mate. Sounds good. I mean, sounds like you've done a lot already so far.
I'm trying, balancing as well as I can. Like, obviously, it's a completely new vibe down in London. Like, obviously, Connor's been looking after me. The King's gym is awesome. But it's like, it's so super busy and everyone is always rushing in London. I feel like it's just a new way of life that I'm slowly adapting to. Like, even in the hospital, it's like, go, 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 lecture, tutorial, hands-on. it's difficult sometimes, it really is, but I'm so passionate about the sport that I don't want to give it up. And at the same time, I know water polo being a non-funded sport, I can't rely on that as a career. So I'm sort of having to balance between the two.
When you were first started playing,
I enjoy both things. So,
sorry, go on.
No, that's good.
I was going to jump in and say, when you first started, when you first started at Kings, or when you were at Liverpool and you were part of the GB setup, was it funded or has it always been non-funded?
So you're breaking my heart, mate, talking about this.
Sorry.
since London 2012, the GB team, we came 9th or 10th, I think. And after that, unfortunately, we lost pretty much all of our funding.
Yeah.
So since 2012, we've been a predominantly self-funded sport. We've had the odd bit of assistance along the way, but that's very, very limited when you think there's a team of 13 players, coach, assistant coach, team manager, trying to travel to numerous different places. I've been to Croatia, as I mentioned, Hungary, Italy. I've been all over the world. This is like a massive expense and kit on top and training costs. It's been a massive financial, I've had to make a massive financial contribution, but at the same time, I wouldn't change any of it. And if I could, if I won the lottery tomorrow, I really, really want to give back and like give kids the opportunity that may not have or been as lucky as I have to be able to afford to take these trips and give them the opportunity to see what water polo can do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really commendable.
Such a good guy.
Do you know what's strange is that, so it's not really strange, but when I first started at Kings, obviously the only people that I really coached were like a couple of runners, a couple of triathletes, etc. But this year, the diversity of athletes that have come in the sports, like, you know, yourself with water polo and now kind of, I guess, venture into rowing. And then you've got, you know, Daisy with canoe and kayak and Elsa with luge. Like all of these sports are unfunded. And it just it blows my mind how you could get so far in a sport that is unfunded, especially when you look at something like weightlifting, for example, where barely anybody actually in the last 50 years have made it to an Olympics, never mind actually medaled at an Olympics. And like, that's also an unfunded sport. It's insane that there's so much talent in a sport that that doesn't pay their athletes at that level.
It's crazy, isn't it? But it's that vicious circle. Like, if you're not winning medals, you don't get the funding. But then without the funding,
absolutely,
you can't climb that sort
of... You can't win medals.
You can't win medals, mate.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A bit of a tough situation to be in.
Yeah.
But I'm not the only sport. Like, there's so many sports that are underfunded, or athletes are doing all the training off their own back and out of their own pockets. It's actually quite crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to quickly jump in on that note and kind of ask both of you, I guess, but do you think that whole situation, that kind of vicious situation where your sport is underfunded and there's not as much opportunity as like we might like it to be to like perform at a really high level, do you think that like translates into your behavior off the pitch as well? So like, do you think, like for you, Lewis, more specifically, like, do you think coming from an underfunded sport like polo, do you think having to work harder, do you think you have to work harder to achieve more in the sport? And does that kind of transfer into your studying? Because like, you know, studying for 2 degrees is no easy feat by any means at all.
I really like that question because one thought popped into my mind. Being an unfunded sport, we used to train in Cardiff, which was an absolute trek for me to get to. I'm from Manchester for people that are listening. So it was like a full weekend. We spent 10 hours in the pool across Saturday, Sunday, 2 hours in the gym. And we're up at like ridiculous o'clock every day to try and fit that in. Now, being unfunded, we didn't get any kit or very, very limited kit. So the kit, if you owned an England Talent or a GB t-shirt, that was like in the water polo world, you are like, you've done something, you've achieved something. And I remember the first time, like obviously I said, the first England trial I went to, I was unsuccessful and it absolutely broke my heart because I thought this was for me. I was really enjoying my sport and it sort of knocked me back a little bit. When I went back for my retrial, I had almost a point to prove. And after that trial, I was given this t-shirt, which I had earned. And yeah, I mate. Absolutely, that just sort of made, that sort of put more fire in my belly and said, this is it. This is what I want to be doing. Just to hold, like, you hear the phrase, been there, done it, got the t-shirt. I had literally been there, done it, and got the t-shirt.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mate, so
well, actually, you earned the t-shirt. You didn't just get the t-shirt.
I felt like I earned the t-shirt, and that sort of makes it that more special, because you see these sports that are fully funded, like swimming, for example. They have millions and millions of pounds, and they throw kits out like it's I don't even know. They just throw it out to athletes, so it means a lot less. Yeah. So Zarco, as you said, that sort of limited resource makes it even more sweet when you actually earn it. You get what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
Absolutely.
100%. It's like, it's almost as good as winning a medal. Like at that stage, I think.
Yeah. When I was probably 15, 16, it was as good as winning a medal or going to my first international competition, just holding that t-shirt. I remember getting in the car and said to mum, look what I've got. She was like, it's a t-shirt. I said, but it's the t-shirt. It's the t-shirt that everybody wears. And she was like, well, I guess well done. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's interesting, man. That because it's almost the way you're talking about it. It's like that t-shirt was a symbol of success.
Yeah. Any kit that I've got has just been, it's like my treasure. Like it's hung up in my wardrobe, and like that's a memory in itself, just even earning that kit, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. That's so powerful. I think, so like to bring it full circle, do you reckon that, I want to ask, on that topic is like, do you, your peers that you played polo with, and when you went into the GB setup, do you think that they had the similar sort of experience with the t-shirt thing?
I think they do. Cause I joined that little bit later. They already sort of had the t-shirt, but they already understood, they understood what it meant to me. So they were like, that's pretty cool. Well done. But I remember again, the first time we got our official GB kit for our first tournament, we were in a hotel the night before and we all put our kit on and just wandered around the hotel just because we had the kit. We looked like right whatevers. but it meant so much to us just to wear that tracksuit with the GB flag on it and to show everyone, look, we've earned this and we've come this far. We couldn't not put it on and wear it with pride.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool to hear that because you don't often hear about just kit having so much of a symbol of, or at least a significance to someone's ability to say like, I've made it sort of thing.
Yeah. And I don't think every athlete would say that because it's different in every sport. Like as we play in speedos, so we have very limited kit, but when we actually get the tracksuit and wear it out and about, it's like, we've seen like Olympians and we've seen gold medal athletes wear this kit and now suddenly we're on it. We're in it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a bit mind blowing.
Yeah.
It's like, I play water polo.
Yeah, then people ask what sport you play and you have to explain what water polo is and how they get the horses in the water. So it's not quite
Yeah. Honestly, that almost reminds me of like I guess the significance of, imagine pulling an All Blacks jersey over your shoulders. Because when you read a lot about the All Blacks, a lot of the things they say is like you leave the jersey in a better place than you found it. And like, it's like that cultural significance of, you know what it's like to have a silver fern over your heart. Because like the silver fern to them is New Zealand. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's exactly the same, mate. It's the same feeling. Like any top level athlete will tell you that putting on that England jersey or that England tracksuit means a hell of a lot. But to someone who, like, where there's limited resources and has actually earned it for years, is totally different in some ways, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine that. So I guess before we move on, I kind of want to catch everyone up. Why did you choose dentistry? I've always wondered that, but I've never actually asked you.
That is a very good question, mate. People ask me why on earth I'd like to sit and stare in someone's mouth all day, every day for the rest of my life. And to be honest, I'm still asking myself the same thing. I've always had an interest in like the human body and how it works. I find it absolutely fascinating. That might make me sound like a little bit of a nerd, but I absolutely love how it works. And I think that links into my sport a little bit, like even muscle development, growth, strength, anything like that.
Yeah.
And I thought how I could incorporate that into my working life. And I've always wanted to be going down the medical physio, sort of that sort of route. And then dentistry sort of popped up as an opportunity. And especially at King's, I couldn't really turn down the opportunity. And I was so excited to come down and start. And it's been a roller coaster, but it's been such a fantastic experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you didn't actually really know that you wanted to do it until you were at Liverpool then?
To be honest, mate, no, I didn't. I always wanted to be a doctor. I always wanted to do medicine or physio, as I said. So I always wanted to be in that sort of hospital environment, helping people. And as cliche as it sounds, I did want to be helping people. Yeah. But then someone suggested dentistry, and a few of the older polo players or someone that I know went down the dentistry route and said he absolutely loved it. Yeah. And I did some work experience, found it fascinating, loved it. And here I am today speaking to you about it. So clearly something's gone right or very, very wrong. I'm not sure.
No, that's pretty cool. I don't think I've ever met a dentistry student or like a dentist in general that haven't liked, they don't look too stressed. Whereas like you look at doctors and stuff and nurses and they just look stressed all the time. Dentists just that like, yeah, one, you know, just
that,
you know.
That's one little bonus of our career. Doctors have like night shifts, 12-hour shifts, and they have bags under their eyes and they work super, super hard. I guess we have sort of a better work-life balance, sort of put it lightly. I guess that's sort of, again, why I chose it, because then I could still pursue my sport because I knew I'd have more of a structured sort of outline in the coming years. But again, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's like everything kind of fits in terms of how you're balancing your life as like a student and as an athlete as well, and kind of what you am I right to say that it works the same way with how you're looking at the future as well? So like what's going to happen when you're done with your degree?
So I guess you could sort of say that everything sort of fall into place, and I know post graduation I really, really want to continue my sport. Like I feel like I've got a little bit more to give in sporting respect, but being a dentist will allow me to be able to do that, if you understand what I'm sort of trying to get at. It's sort of that work-life balance and having that freedom, especially in the mornings and the evenings, that I'm going to need to train.
So it's like you can't have one without the other, basically. So they work together.
They work together super well. I think without my sport, I'd be struggling with my dentistry. I think without the dentistry and that sort of structure during the day, I wouldn't really have a future with sport because water polo, as I said, is unfunded. I'd be at a dead end almost come the end of my polo career. So it's sort of got to be a balance, as we mentioned before.
Definitely. I guess that kind of brings us, I mean, we've kind of spoken a little bit about pulling on the GB jersey and things like that, but just to sort of elaborate a little bit more, what else would you define as success, or would you define yourself as successful? Like, what does successful look like to you in your sport, like in general?
Okay, I found this really interesting, and when I actually sat down and thought about it, a lot of ideas popped into my head. But I think you can't deny it, you are successful when you get up every single day out of bed and you're excited to do what you're about to do every single day. So for me, getting up out of bed and being excited to go to the gym to train, and then knowing I've got a full day of uni doing a course that I enjoy, I think that sort of makes you successful. Working towards the goal and knowing that it's sort of in such a competitive environment, like for the training sessions, you have to be mental to get up at 5 a.m. and want to jump in a freezing cold pool. And I tell you that when I'm stood on poolside in my little swimming shorts and I'm like, right, coach, let's go, I don't want to get in the pool, especially when it's dark outside, it's raining, but knowing that the session's going to be brutal, you're going to have that 1% gain or even 0.1% gain on your opponent, leading to that sort of magic moment where you're standing on poolside with the other lads that have worked super hard and you train with them and you're belting out the national anthem. That was like spine tingling success, if you get what I mean. So another point, I was recently listening to a podcast now, Ross Edgley, I'm not sure if you've heard of him, massive inspiration of mine. He's like an adventure explorer athlete completing incredible feats of human endurance. Most recently swam around the whole of Great Britain, took him like 157 days. Now he is like the pinnacle of what humans can do, and funnily enough, he's actually an ex-GB water polo player, so who knows, might be following down that path in a few years. You don't know. But he was talking about a term like Aristotle coined. Now, we're getting a little bit deep here. It's called the term eudaimonia. Now, this idea, so the ancient Greeks believed that happiness is a bad word. It means that you should be happy with no suffering, no labor, and you shouldn't have to struggle to get there. Whereas eudaimonia, Aristotle used this and said, you need to earn it. There should be a struggle. for example, Connor, Zarko, if someone offered you £1 million today, yeah, you'd take it. You might be happy, wicked, but it's not eudaimonia.
Yeah.
Happiness without fulfillment could be considered a little bit of a failure. And Aristotle said this, and I found that when sort of in pursuit of that eudaimonia, it's the suffering which makes the victory and the success the little bit sweeter.
Absolutely.
And it's the process, it's the intrinsic motivation to want to get up every day out of bed and work hard and study. And I think, yes, fair enough, some people would consider me successful competing in European world stage, but I think I'm still in pursuit of that eudaimonia, and I've got many, many more years to come, whether that be through polo or rowing. I'm still sort of on that journey, trying to find that success and that happiness, but with that fulfillment. Apologies, I got super deep, super fast, but I just wanted to, like, I thought that was super interesting.
Mate, that, I fully agree there. I know Connor wants to jump in and say something, but I want to throw this in, right? Because one thing that's just popped into my head right now as you're talking about eudaimonia is, the first time I heard about eudaimonia was actually, like, while I was playing polo, and right. I was in school, and we had, like, a philosophy. I used to do... it's like philosophy and ethics of religion, and we were learning about Aristotle and like the ancient Greeks. And like, by the way, this is like the moment where I started realizing that I wanted to study classics, which I ended up doing a few years later. But I find it really interesting that it's like, because when I played polo, and I think you've touched on it there really well, was, you know, when it's dark outside and you're about to go into the pool, there's this constant struggle, because like your mind is telling you like, fuck no, I don't want to go in the pool. Like, get me out of here. But like, you know, you've got to get yourself in. But it's like, yeah, there's this constant struggle, but it's cutting that kind of fine balance, because then afterwards you feel amazing, but it's like a continuous process. Like you say, it's in competing in the national team and winning competitions and whatever. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but I want to say it's really interesting that you mentioned this kind of philosophy that drives your actions.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's so, I don't know. I want to ask you actually, well, like, if you think that's something that is like, it's probably an obvious question, but like if that's something that's very valuable to being a successful athlete or student.
Yeah, of course it's without that, I don't think you'd be able to high level, like, without that passion and the drive and wanting to have that moment stood on poolside singing the national anthem, you're not driven. You're not going to get out of bed at 6 a.m. for example, to get on a bus to go see Connor at 6 a.m. to be absolutely abused in the gym. You know what I mean? And I think any athlete that even like you speak to on this podcast, any world-class athlete, maybe without even realizing it, are training and going down this journey just for that moment, for that feeling of fulfillment, and they've achieved something, and they've proven that they're the best that they can be at that time, and no one can take that away from them. Oh, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. Really well said, I think.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with everything that you both just said. And I guess to add to that, what's funny is that I've just read Ross Edgley's book, and it was really interesting, because at first I thought that he was kind of just like a YouTube personality, and I was like, you know, he doesn't really like resonate, like some of the things that he was saying doesn't really resonate. But then when I kind of started reading a little bit about it, I was like, well, actually this guy, he's so well educated as well as being a phenomenal athlete. And I was just like, wow, like I didn't realize that this guy was just like, he's a freak in everything that he does.
He is a freak. It's not just physical as well for him. It's a mental game.
Yeah.
He's extremely educated. Like the way he talks about stoicism and mental resilience is crazy. And he's put it into perspective in a way that it's easy to understand. And without sort of listening to that podcast and reading the book, I don't think I would have understood what I'm doing without him saying what he's saying, if you get me.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's the application of that knowledge, right? Because then like you might have that knowledge, but then it's like, well, what do I do with it? And then you might like brush it over, but then it's like, that's a good point actually, because he takes it and then he uses it and does something from it. And
absolutely,
I think that's really valuable. I think you do that too, Lewis.
I guess I'd try. It's not quite the feat of swimming around Great Britain, but even getting myself out of bed onto the bus, sometimes it 9 times out of 10, it would be so much easier for me to turn the alarm off, text Con saying, sorry, not coming, mate, and go back to sleep for another hour. But at the same time, I can't afford to be doing that knowing other athletes are getting up around the world trying to compete against me, and they're not turning their alarm off and not going to training.
Honestly, I was waiting for the day when I would have to say that to you if you texted me saying I can't come in. I was waiting for it. I was waiting, but then you never did it. And I was like, wow, I'm impressed.
I'm afraid that day is not going to come, mate. So.
Don't get your hopes up, Con.
What's really interesting about the Aristotle thing is one of the quotes when I first started working in S&C, one of the quotes that I came across with Aristotle was pleasure in the job puts perfection in the work. And I'd never really, before I started working in S&C or weightlifting coaching, I didn't really understand how that would feel. And it's not really like, it's not directly related to eudaimonia, but it's loosely related in the fact that like some people might strive for happiness, you know, in the struggle of getting a gold medal at world champs or getting loads of money or whatever it might be. But when I first started working with you guys, and it's only really been this year when I set up my own weightlifting club and started coaching at Kings, where I was literally, I kind of sat back and I was like, wow, like this is like, it feels really good. You know, the way that you were describing getting up every day, and as much as sometimes it sucks, like you do it because you want to do it. You don't do it because you're getting paid or because, you know, because someone's asking you to do it.
Yeah, it comes down to that sort of enjoyment factor as well. Like, Con, when we're working together, I think you can tell I'm enjoying the session and I can tell you're enjoying coaching. Absolutely. And that makes it so much easier. Like, some people, like I, as much as I complain about it, I enjoy having a long day at uni. It's tiring, but I wouldn't change it for the world. But some people wouldn't enjoy that. Some people, it's different for everyone. So people might not be in sport, but they're happy to go sit and program a computer for 12 hours a day. And if they enjoy that and be fulfilled from it, then so be it, and absolutely fantastic for them. So it's different for everyone, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Lewis, I want to ask you as well, building on what you said there about you and Con working together in the training sessions, do you think that to build a successful relationship there, like between yourself and Connor, is that something born out of motivation to turn up every day at like 6 a.m. or whatever it might be? Or is it discipline, or are the two related?
That's a very good question. I think there's an aspect of both. So I could tell from the first session that when I first met Connor, even when he texted me or emailed me, that I would get on with him and we'd have this sort of good coach-athlete relationship. I don't think I get that with every S&C coach or coach that I've had, without trying not to slag anyone off. But if you enjoy working together through the discipline and through the enjoyment, then there's going to be success, if you understand what I'm getting at. Like, we both have to put the effort in order for the relationship to work. Like, imagine if Con had spent all his time texting me, supporting me, encouraging me to come in, and I just turned around and said, yeah, can't be bothered, don't want to do it. Like, that's going to cause tension, that's going to cause friction, and there's no success going to be bred from that.
Great, yeah. So it takes kind of understanding what you need to do and then communicating and just getting it done.
Exactly. So I sort of tell Con what I'd like to achieve, obviously adapting from polo through to rowing, and he sort of feedback to me and said, this is why we're doing this exercise, this is going to make you stronger, this is going to make you more stable. And I go, absolutely fantastic. And it's just sort of that mutual respect almost for both doing the best job that we can. And fingers crossed we see some results from it, because obviously this lockdown has sort of put a spanner in the works. I had loads of training sessions for the England senior men's team lined up, and it's just all disappeared and vanished in the last 3 months, which is a real shame, because I like to feel like I made some progress with Con, and I just can't really put it into practice.
But just to briefly touch on that as well, I think it makes a really good point that I would never claim to be like the best S&C coach or the best weightlifting coach, but one of the things that I always tend to pride myself on is that I always want to make sure that the athlete feels like they're comfortable, that they can talk to me, not just as a coach, but almost as like a friend or like someone who they would want to come to if they had any kind of issue.
And I think you've done that really well because, from the start, you've kept the balance between coach and mate really, really well. Like, I feel like I could text you with any problems or say, I'm not going to make the session, blah, 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 uni, and you totally understand. But at the same time, you're on my case to get the job done and get the sessions done, which is really, really good. And the way you said that, like, you don't claim to be the best S&C coach in the world. You're so humble about it, but you don't realize the impact you're having on all the athletes that have ever. And we think you do a fantastic job, mate. And the programs you write and the progress we made has been absolutely like unbelievable. So I guess I can take the opportunity to say thanks.
Yeah. But the thing is, appreciate that actually. But also what's interesting about that is it, like, as much as it would, it's, you know, it's down to, let's just say, you know, obviously the compliment in the program that it is, but let's be honest, it's not me that has to do the program. So like going back to kind of the athlete coach relationship, it always takes two to tango. Like, you can't, even if you're not the best S&C coach in the world, or you don't have an amazing program, even the best athlete in the world, as long as you're doing as much as you can for that person and that athlete is giving you the respect back, that relationship is so much more fruitful than someone who doesn't listen to what you're doing, even if you're writing an amazing program.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I'm also very lucky with the people that I coach, like you, like Jarko, Alex, like, you know, the people that I'm able to come in contact with on a daily basis. It makes it so much easier to get up and be like, right, let's do it. I'm ready. Even if there's, you know, where there's days where obviously I've told you things about the politics and you've told me things about the politics, and then Jarko knows all about that.
Both ways, mate. Like, it's just, yeah.
Politics is politics, right?
Yeah, let's not get into that now. But there's situations where there's been, you know, off days. We've both been either like here or there or mine from elsewhere. But when we're in that session, it's like we're both doing the best that we can. We're both getting the job done. And then after that, doesn't matter what happens. We can just move on, crack absolutely. On and get on with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of bringing it, I guess, I kind of want to tie this question into sort of what we were talking about was, have you ever experienced anything of difficulty in your life and how have you overcome these? Now, I'm not specifically looking for like certain points in your life, but I just want to know if and how you would kind of go about dealing with difficulties.
Okay. There's been a lot of ups and downs, as anyone in the sporting, professional, whatever world it is, there's always going to be ups and downs. But one specific example that I wanted to sort of focus on was back in first year Liverpool Uni, so before my first World University Games, I injured my back. So I just twisted funny in the water in my lower back. You can't do anything when your back's hurting. Like, I was out the pool. Physio said 8 weeks minimum, can't train, can't lift weights, can't do anything. And that absolutely like broke my heart. The worst part was England had a game against Scotland. It's like an annual event. And we'd won last time. And I really, like, I was part of that squad and training towards playing for England against Scotland again. And I was devastated because I had to ring the coach and say, look, I've done my back in, I can't play. And what made it even harder was that, yes, he was supportive, but my space within that team got filled in a heartbeat. So it sort of was a little bit of a wake-up call to say, look, you're not safe within this squad. A water polo team has 13 players. There's sort of 18 in the squad, so we can sort of rotate if there is injuries. But that moment sort of lit a fire in my belly to say, look, you can't take anything for granted anymore. You're going to have to do so much more prehab, rehab, get back to where you were, and be part of that team again. Because I went to watch them play and be missing out on, they won. Awesome, fantastic. The lads won, congratulations to them. But I felt like I was missing out. Yeah. And after the 8 weeks, I was back in the pool. And that's when I trained hard and we became top eight at a World University Games competition. So I guess one main thing for me was not to be too disheartened by the situation. Like, a quote that I really like, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react. Like, I could have turned around and say, I hate the sport, someone's replaced me, never playing polo again, and sort of throwing my dummy out the pram, so to speak. But I couldn't afford to do that because I enjoy playing so much, competing at the top level. I had to realize, okay, I'm in a pretty bad place. I'm in a bad situation. Got to keep that positive mindset. As soon as I can, I'll be back in the gym working as hard as I can and prove to the coach that I deserve a place in that team for the next competition. So I guess it sort of comes down to that positive mental attitude, which I think a lot of athletes do have, as much as there's, it's difficult to talk about because sometimes mental health can be stigmatized and people don't like opening up. I think athletes specifically have quite a strong positive mental outlook, if you see what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what sort of helped me through that one specific incident. And since then, like, I've been doing prehab, rehab, trying to protect my back as much as I can because I don't want to be in the same situation I was a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And
that sounds tough.
Just to quickly jump in there, I guess it's not so much kind of talking about the injury itself, but it's more talking about your mindset. I think what's the most important thing as an athlete, even if you do suffer from any kind of mental health, is when it comes to performing at your best, you have to think positively, even if you don't think it's going to go well. Like, you've already lost half the battle.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds super cliche, but like, winning isn't just in the body. It's mainly in the mind.
It is a lot of the mental game. So just an example there, when we went to the World Junior Games, we played against Hungary. Now, Great Britain versus Hungary has a reputation of being a bit of a, how to put it nice, a walkover for Hungary, let's say. But we couldn't let that attitude influence our game. So pre-game, we did exactly the same preparation as we did for, we would do for any other game. We put in our proper land warm-up, proper water warm-up, and we went to give them a game. We wanted to take the game to them as much as we knew it would be probably one of the toughest games we've ever played.
Yeah.
It was fantastic to play against such a good team, and we wanted to prove that Great Britain water polo, we aren't just a walkover. We lost the game, but if we didn't have that positive attitude, it probably would have been 10 times worse.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. And on that, what I wanted to jump in, because obviously like that's a really tough situation that you were in. And I want to know if like, could you in that time where you were injured, were you able to kind of confide in your comrades in the pool and like, still be able to like talk with your teammates and kind of like let it out with
I still wanted to be involved. There was no way I was going to miss a training session, even if it was training. I was there on poolside, sort of just trying to be as involved as I could, if you see what I mean. Because I was speaking to them, there's sort of a few, you have your best mates in the squad, so I was speaking to them saying, look, it's on my back, and they were like, look, as long as you keep that attitude, you'll be back in the squad in no time. Like, we know how hard you work. We know you're a decent player. Like, you just need to recover. There's no point pushing it, coming back early or being silly about it and injuring yourself either more or worse than it was before and having to take 12, 16 weeks out, if you know what I mean. So there was people I could confide in, and the coach was very helpful in that situation. So, yeah, I guess that really helped me a lot because I knew I had people I could speak to.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's something that kind of transcends into all walks of life, really. Just being able to talk about your situation sometimes. I know it might sound selfish, but like, you know, it's like you go through these tough periods and then, I don't know, I feel like it's good to just have someone that you can turn to or people that you can turn to and just kind of let it out on the plate.
Absolutely. Because it's not even what you say. It's just sometimes getting it off your chest makes you feel so much better.
Yeah. Like, literally, yeah, like you said, it doesn't even have to be coherent. It's just like, oh, I want to get it back in the pool. And like, oh yeah, 100%.
So, looking to the future, this is not a question that was asked to you. I guess to phrase this question, if you ever kind of think about the future, first of all, does that scare you? And second of all, what sort of things allow you to prepare for what you might potentially encounter in the future?
Ooh, this is good. I like this. So I don't think the future is scary. I think if you're scared about the future, you worry too much and you're not going to enjoy the moment that you're in and make the most of it. So I'm not scared. I'm super excited for the future to see what it holds. Like being at King's, starting rowing, still got my foot in the door with water polo. So who knows what road I'm going to go down. I find that really exciting. But at the same time, what you said, how am I preparing for that? It's putting in that work every single day. Like at uni, it can be super intense. And if you go a week without catching up on your notes or doing some extra reading, you're going to fall behind super fast. Mm. And the same with sport. If you take a week off, you're going to come back and be sluggish. You're going to be slow. You're going to have lost that sort of strength and power. So every single day, I try and do as much as I can to not to sort of direct the path that I'm going down. As uncertain as it is, I want to do the best and be the best prepared I can be for whatever situation arises, if that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I want to quickly ask on that note is, how do you know that you're doing the right thing? Like, if you're doing a lot, how do you know that it's the right thing? Because that's something I struggle with.
To be honest, it could be the totally wrong thing. I like to think I'm doing the right thing, but I never know. I might turn around and say, why on earth did I want to do sport? I want to be an astronaut. You know, you don't know what doors are going to open, but I like to think, like, for what ideally I'd like to do, I'm sort of doing the right thing, if you get the gist I'm going for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there like a gut instinct kind of thing there as well, mixed in?
I think it comes back to this fulfillment. Like, I know deep down and like in my gut that I want to be successful in my sport and in my dentistry career. So I think that's what drives me, if you get what I mean. So I feel like I know I'm on the right path for now. Like, as I said, things could change, opportunities could open, but I'm quite happy with where I am and the progress that I'm making to prepare me for what's going to come my way.
Absolutely.
It's like an innately recognized, or like a, yeah, innately recognized feeling.
It is. It's a strange thing, because people say, why on earth would I want to play water polo? Why do I want to go row? And it's like, I enjoy it. At the end of the day, it comes back to the enjoyment. I want to be in a pool. I want to be rowing in a boat. I want to be pushing myself till I'm nearly sick on a rowing machine. You know, it's messed up, some people say, but that's what I want to do. And I want to be looking in people's mouths for the rest of my life. So if people think that's weird, then that's fine, but this is what I enjoy. It's what I want to do. So it's hopefully what I'll end up doing for a long time to come.
Sweet, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's honestly one of the reasons why I think we get on so well, because, and also the same with Jarko. When I first met Jarko, Jarko was a totally different person to what he is now. And obviously I know this is not a podcast about my co-host, but it's relatable. And I think actually kind of listening to you guys talk, and I definitely think that having a background in water polo, or at least being faced with adversity in a sport like water polo, where you could literally be drowned, like you could die, like, and for a non-swimmer, that's bloody scary. But I think what I'm kind of sort of trying to say is that, like, when I first met you guys, and like obviously our relationship has developed, is one of the things that I've always tried to focus on is control the controllables and forget about everything else.
Yes.
And I think like that is very much what you were saying in terms of your future, is you don't know if it's right. Yeah,
you've summed that up perfectly. I knew what I was trying to get at, but it was on the tip of my tongue. Control the controllables and everything else. You can't change the uncontrollables. You can't change the weather. If I have to run to training in the rain, you can't change that. You have to get it done.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's perfectly put. Thanks, Connor.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was kind of listening to you speak about it, and I was just like, that's literally exactly how I would say it. It's like, you control the controllables, and everything else will happen. Like, it doesn't matter. I think honestly, actually, I want to recommend a book to you, which might not be related to rowing or anything, but I recently just read a book by Ben Bergenon, and it's called Chasing Excellence. Awesome. And it's a super easy read. It's like maybe a day. You could probably read it in a day. Like, it's, and I'm not, I'm not really one for reading that much. I do like reading, but I'm quite slow when it comes to reading. But I could read it in a day. And one of the things that he talks about there is kind of controlling the controllables and knowing what you can control and what you can't. Yeah. And I think that it's a super interesting read when you talk about it, because it puts it into perspective that if you're always worrying about what you're doing in the future and worrying about what you can't control, like you said it, the weather, the crowd, how much sleep you've got, or, you know, your emotions. Sometimes you can't control those, but the things you can control is going to bed a little bit earlier, waking up with a positive mindset, which affects everything. And it was interesting to hear you guys talk about that. So I just kind of just wanted to butt in. And
yeah, absolutely. And I think, well, not to like self-advertise, whatever, I wanted to challenge myself. Mindset, because I think my body's like quite strong as it is, but I think my mind can let me down sometimes. So I don't know if you've seen, I've set myself a challenge of doing a 24-hour row.
Yep.
Now, physically, that's going to be tough. But I think mentally, if you've ever seen me with no sleep, I'm a cranky person, and I'm not very nice to be around if I've not slept. So imagine having to exercise for 24 hours without sleep. And I think that challenge, I'm trying to control as many controllables as I can. I want to make it a nice, safe environment. I want to be in a peak condition. I'm going to be stretched. I'm going to be warmed up, and I'm going to be ready to go. Yeah. But the uncontrollables, so it could be a really rainy day. The screen could fail, but whatever happens, I'm still going to go. I'm still going to push myself and try and work through those 24 hours.
Definitely. Mate, I commend you on that, because I did a marathon row before. It's just 42,000 meters, and I was absolutely dead. Not to scare you, but like, mate, I couldn't get off the rowing machine. My back was stiff. Like,
oh, no. You're saying the wrong things here, Con. But I think that's what like it excites me. Like, as weird as it might sound, that I'm excited to see where I go and where my mind takes me and where my body goes, because I've never done anything like it before.
Yeah.
So I just sort of want to test myself and see what I get up to, and then it might be interesting to see the results.
But that's the weird thing, is when I was on the rowing machine doing it. Now, obviously, 24 hours is a hell of a lot longer than 42,000 meters. But when I started like feeling stiffness in my back and in my hips, I was kind of just like, it almost eggs you on. It's weird. You're kind of just like, oh yeah, come on then. Have you got more?
It's like this. It's no pain, no gain. It's like you start hurting. Like, come on, we're not
what's
done
next?
Yet. We've got a bit more to go. Yeah.
It's really sadistic.
It is, and I think that's why some people think sports like high level sports people are a bit weird. Like we're obsessed. That's the thing. We're obsessed with what we want to do, and that's, I think a lot of people miss out on that. They don't find their obsession in life and what they enjoy and what they want to do. They just sort of bimble around, not sure what they're doing, and just sort of falling through life. And I don't want to do that. I want to have direction and an aim and something to aim to like achieve at the end of the day. So yeah.
100%. Your attitude, well, both of you, very contagious. Now I feel like I want to do rowing now. I feel like that's my next direction now.
I wouldn't recommend a marathon or a 24 hour.
Even a 2K is probably worse.
Yeah, I mean, after doing weightlifting for like the past 3 years, anything like even running more than 10 meters is just like, ow.
Don't even get me started. I can swim like all day, but put me on a running machine, a treadmill, or running outside. Oh, no chance.
that's such a swimmer thing though, I think. Like, I hate it. When I stopped playing polo, that was like, I thought I might need to keep my fitness up by running. And yeah, that didn't last very long.
No, just, not at all.
My technique, no matter how hard I tried, was just like never coming together.
I can teach you, but what's funny is when I obviously I've been coaching Lewis now about, I guess, 6 months. Let's say 6 months, because obviously this kind of COVID thing is not like, obviously we've been having
doesn't
online
count.
Stuff or whatever, but it doesn't, in my eyes, it doesn't really count. But what's funny is so obviously the first couple of months, it was more just like get a lay of the land, figure out what sort of things he enjoys, what he doesn't enjoy, what he needs, what he might potentially doesn't need. What sort of stuff he doesn't enjoy, which I'll put in anyway, just because mentally it helps you overcome, you know, because so like I'll have athletes and they'll come up to me and they'll say, I don't like chin-ups. And straight away I'm thinking, well, I'm putting chin-ups in your program for until you enjoy them, because like it's a mental struggle. And like that's half of of what I'm trying to develop is it's not just like coming into the gym and enjoying stuff you do. It's, I want to have an environment where I want to challenge you so that when you go out on the pitch, having physical prowess is not the only thing that you've developed. But tying into that, when I first met Lewis, obviously getting the lay of the land, blah, blah, blah. And I remember one of the first proper testing sessions that we did where I made you do the 4x4. I obviously, Lewis is a very fit individual, and I have never seen someone blow out of their ass so much than Lewis. Like, he went out so hard in the first.
Was intense. I've never done anything like that. I went out way too fast, but yeah. I think I managed to hold it, man. Yeah. I don't think you.
Yeah, you did do really well, actually, to be fair. But what was funny was, do you know when you do something and you kind of like don't anticipate how hard it was going to be in the first instance? Yeah. So you do it, and then after those first 4 minutes, you had 4 minutes rest, and I was like, right, Lewis, you're ready for the second one. And I just remember your face just looking at me like, a second one. You're fucking kidding me.
I think it was like, this is this moment of like dread.
It was at that moment Lewis knew he fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but what was interesting was the mentality where he straight away, he went, oh shit, I fucked up. And then he's like, and then straight away he like stared at the row machine. I was like, right, countdown, 10 seconds. And then he, as soon as I said like 10 seconds, he just, his mind switched and he was like, right, let's go. I've got to beat myself. And I was just like, that is the mentality of, sort of person that I enjoy coaching.
If you're going to do it, mate, if you're going to do it properly. You have to be in the zone. You've got to commit. You're not going to see the Zarka, like say, you're not going to see the gains. You're not going to see the improvements. So
yeah,
you have to put it in. You have to put it in every single day.
Yep. Lewis, how do you find, or how did you enter S&C to kind of age or supplement your sport? How did you find it, like transitioning in like workouts in the gym and finding your zen? Because I know that it can be very distracting compared to perhaps playing polo or swimming.
Yeah, so I've always enjoyed the S&C sessions and the gym environment, because in the pool you can't put music on, you can't put your headphones in. I love working out to music. So me and Conway have like multiple playlists, some silly songs going on while we're working out, but I absolutely love that. So when I'm swimming, head down, goggles on, that's one type of zen. When I'm with the team, that's a second type of zen. When I'm in the gym having like the best time listening to this music, that's like a third type of zen.
It's just all different.
It's all different, but they're all, I enjoy them all. Like even when Connor's playing that opera or whatever he's doing, or trying to wind me up, I take it in my stride and I want to go, I want to push. Like I've never squatted to like classical music before, but there we are, classic squatting in the gym to classical music.
Stimulus.
I still remember that wasn't even one of my favorite days. One of my favorite days was when we had a session at, and you came in a little bit early and I was already there, and I just remember putting some Russian hard bass on, and you walk in and it's like 6 a.m and you just looked at me like, fair enough, it's gonna be one of those days then.
I thought you'd lost the plot. I walked in at 6 a.m., still half asleep, and you were sort of there bouncing around. And I was like, this isn't going to go down well. But we got in the zone, we got there, had the Russian heavy bass on, whatever it is, and we smashed the session. We did it.
Got that energy.
Yeah, safe to say, I've not let that happen again, because that was like a moment and a half. That was.
Yeah, it was. I was bouncing around. I was like, right, never again. That was a bit too stimulating for me at 6 a.m.
Like energy was gone for the rest of the day.
I was dead after that. I was like, well, I'm dead. I'm gonna go sit down. Yeah. Cool. To be fair, the last question we've already touched on it with, I guess, you, the reason you undertook rowing and stuff like that. So I think what we'll do is if we just move on to the quick fire round, if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a bit nervous for this, so we'll see how this goes.
Don't worry. Let's then. Do it. Yeah, Z, do you want to kick it off then?
I'll kick it off. So the first question is, and actually I'll explain a little bit first. I was thinking of throwing in a few players' names, but then I thought, like, I don't want to embarrass myself and, like, you know, say someone that, like, you might not know or have to Google it or whatever. But
okay.
First question. Favorite water polo player / nation? So it's kind of a double question.
Okay, good question.
No pressure.
Player, in fact, Fave Nation has got to be Hungary, because I've played against them, I've trained like in their culture, and it's just totally different. Like, we go to the pub to watch football, they go to the pub to watch water polo, and playing the sport for so long, you sort of miss out on that being a water polo player in the UK. So that sort of culture is just, it just puts this energy into you. So that's sort of why Hungary is probably my favourite nation. Favourite player on the spot. So an old Hungarian player, Peter Biros, used to be sort of an inspiration because they won three consecutive gold medals, Hungary, and he was the captain of the team. And I actually bumped into him when I was in Hungary and sort of got to chat with him for a little bit. So that was like totally inspiring. And that's to speak to one of your favourite players who's got three gold medals to his name was sort of a little bit breathtaking.
Yeah, that's really cool. So if you could choose one place to go and visit in the whole world, where would it be?
Oh, good question. Are you offering? Are you taking me, Connor? Is this my little reward?
Yeah. Where do you want to go?
It would be South America, sort of somewhere tropical, sunny by a beach where I didn't have to do anything. A few cocktails, you know, somewhere super chill. That would be awesome.
Talked about how hard you work and comes out with this answer.
Yeah. Work hard, play harder.
Work hard, play hard. Yeah, you know the drill.
And that's lots of cocktails.
All right. If you were stranded on a desert island, which I guess, yes, quite fitting, what are the five things that you would take with you?
Oh, you put me on the spot here. Quite fitting. I'd probably enjoy it for a little bit, to be fair. I'd be there on my sun lounger, sipping a few cocktails, but then stranded. I'd probably have to take a book. Like, as Con mentioned, Ross Edgley's last book was totally inspirational. I'd take a book. I'd be reading that. I'd be studying it. I'd be learning everything that he's been teaching. Secondly, I'd take my phone, as cliche and bad as that sounds. I'd probably want to get off the island. I'd be calling for help sort of after a few days, I'm sure. Polo ball, do some training in the sea, swim with the fish. Now, the one thing I'm scared of the ocean if I can't see the bottom. But the fact I've been training for polo and such a good swimmer, like, it's a little bit weird, but I'm scared of the sea. Fun fact of the day. It would have to be food. The unknown. Into the unknown, yeah. The unknown's a bit scary. Fourth would have to be food. I'd have to have a massive supply. Not sure what I'd take. My favourite food is probably Chinese food again. Not really the athlete inside of me speaking, but a good Chinese meal would keep me going for a long, long time. And lastly, probably my headphones so I can listen to some music. You know, that sort of takes me to my zen zone. I just chill out a little bit.
Fair play. Yeah. No sun cream.
No.
See, what I'm picturing is lots of palm trees so I can stay in the shade a little bit, mate. So, you know, you don't need that sun cream.
So just to give you some context. Sorry, hold on. Let me compose myself. So in one of our first podcasts that we recorded, I asked Jarko what you would take to a desert island. And I came up with stuff like a knife, some boots, like blah. Jarko just said, I'd take some sun cream. Sun cream. That's okay. The first thing you would think of in a survival situation.
So you don't get burnt.
Oh my God.
Mate, I applaud that. You've got to look after that skin. You can't be burning day one, day two. You'll be causing yourself some pain. You won't be able to escape. Never mind if you've got a knife or whatever survival kit Con's got. You've got sore skin. You won't be doing anything.
Yeah, but you'll be hungry.
You know what it's like, Lewis, swimming out in an open pool and the sun's coming down. And
oh, yeah.
You don't feel that heat. And
you don't feel it. You get out the pool and you touch your shoulders. You're like, uh-oh, this is going to be sore.
Not a good feeling. Okay. All right, good choice. Five solid things. I didn't think about the phone thing, actually. Actually calling for help.
But so, I gave you a constraint. I said you weren't allowed to call for help.
Oh, ooh. Fair. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but we'll allow it. Who is your sporting inspiration and why?
Say Ross Edgley.
I think you've spoken enough about Ross. So a few years ago when I was very, very young, 10, 11, 12, I took part in a triathlon, like a mini kids triathlon. And I don't know how, but I ended up winning it. And the prize was a bike and to meet Steve Redgrave. So Steve Redgrave.
Wow.
Now, at the time, it probably didn't mean so much to me, but now I'm starting rowing and seeing what he's achieved as a rower and as a great British rower. that inspiration and sort of, it was almost like a message to say you're going on the right track here, because I pulled out the photos like, hang on, I know that's Sir Steve Redgrave, and I met him and he's congratulating me. So I almost want that sort of full circle moment where maybe I compete at a top level and he comes up to me and says, well done. And I'll go, you know what, 20 years ago, I won a triathlon and you came up to me and said, well done. And I think that sort of motivates me to sort of push myself a little bit further because of what he's achieved.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting little story. And I think that's quite fitting with the going on the right path sort of thing.
And especially with rowing as well.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens, mate. We'll see what happens.
Maybe you'll get another medal from him if you win anything.
I think that'd be creepy. I think that'd be an awesome full circle moment, but clearly the universe is sort of saying you're on the right track.
Yeah, I thought you meant creepy as in he'd just come up to you and be like, I've been watching you.
Yeah, here's your medal.
Here's your medal.
I'm not a rower anymore.
Sorry. That would be quite creepy, wouldn't it?
A little bit creepy, yeah.
Lewis, I've been watching you ever since that triathlon day.
This is freaking me out now.
All right, and on that note, last question. If you could have a superpower, what would it be and why?
Oof.
The age-old question on this podcast.
A very good question. Now, my mind's sort of revolving around, you know, like flying, invisibility, but I think it'd be like to be able to function fully at my potential without sleep, because I sleep so much and I feel like when I'm sleeping I'm not being productive. So if I didn't have to sleep, I'd be training, I'd be working, I'd be traveling, I'd be doing everything that I could. So I feel like I could of this life that I've been given and sort of put more into every single day. Now that's probably an answer you weren't expecting, but I guess if I had the choice, I think that'd be pretty awesome.
Absolutely. Wow. Have you that? Do you know what that reminds me of? Have you ever seen Limitless?
Is that where they take the pill and they've got like a higher brain function or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that.
Con, you want us to take pills?
Basically, I'm just saying that you should take Adderall. that's the same thing. That's a superpower.
We've gone from performing at the highest level. Now we're talking about cocktails.
To popping pills.
And also, by the way, I'm not very good at editing, so I'm not editing that out. I might even call it Lewis Daily Pill Pop. No, I'm joking.
No, I wouldn't call it that.
I'm just joking. Lewis,
so Steve Redgrave is like, he's going to see it. He might see it and be like, oh, things took a turn there.
What happened to Lewis? Yeah, that's gone badly wrong.
Oh, mate. Well, I guess that caps it off. I just want to say this has actually been probably one of the best podcasts that we've had so far, just in terms of like the conversations that we've had and the stories that you've shared. Like, we really appreciate you coming on, so thank you very much for that.
Oh, mate, that's lovely to hear. I appreciate you saying that, because I wasn't nervous to come on, but I was sort of apprehensive to see where this would go or whether I wouldn't be able to answer questions. But it's been like fantastic to be able to share sort of mine through sport and things, and to be able to put it out there with you two.
Absolutely, mate. Really, man. Really,
it's
appreciate
so good.
It.
I feel like we've got a bro moment going on here. It's just like, we're just chatting. It's all chill. And then maybe we'll have you on a few years down the line with when you're a famous rower.
Mate, I'd be an absolute privilege. You can call me whenever you want.
Yeah. I'll probably still know him if he's still at King's. I'll have to coach him.
Yeah, well, I've got a few more years at King's. You'll be coaching me, mate. So, and you won't be letting me go if I'm performing at the top level. You'd be like, that's my athlete. No one else is coming.
I'm already like that. I'm like, because they were asking about, you know, performance athletes and stuff last year. And like, I guess without going into too much detail, I was like, yeah, just make sure that I'm like coaching Lewis and Megan and like Yushuan and all that next year though, yeah? Elsa. I just named everyone that I'm coaching this year. I was like, Elsa, Lewis,
subtle
Megan,
name drop.
Yeah,
yes.
Everyone. anyway, do you want to quickly plug your Instagram to where people can find you?
Yeah, so my Instagram's Lewis_daily96. Not to self-plug too much, but my 24-hour row is on there, and I'd be raising money for Bolton Hospice, so it'd be fantastic if I get a little bit of support. But again, thank you so much for having me on this today. It's been an absolute privilege.
Absolutely. Well, pop your when does it close? Because we can probably pop it actually in the podcast.
Yeah, we've got It's 4 weeks from now, mate, so I've got a bit of time to train, so there's no rush on that.
Okay, perfect. So what we'll do is we'll stick that in the description of our podcast, guys. So if you want to sponsor Lewis, please do, obviously for a great cause. Is there going to be a live stream or anything?
I'm going to try and live stream it. So yeah, I'll be doing Instagram updates so you can see me crying in pain, trying to not hurt my back for 24 hours. So I'll be keeping you all updated.
I might just watch you for the whole 24 hours. That'll be my marathon. I'll call it Lewis Watching Marathon.
You turn into Steve Redgrave now.
Oh, I'm worse than Steve.
Connor's just going to sit there with a tub of Ben and Jerry's, just like waffling down ice cream, watching you sweat and get it done.
All right. Before this gets any weirder than it already has, I think we'll sign off there. So thank you guys for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. Obviously, you can check us out on all of the channels that we've plugged in the last 13 episodes. I don't need to say it anymore. Follow us at ITU Podcast. And again, Lewis, thank you so much for coming on. And we shall catch you in the next episode of
Into the Unknown.
Bye.